The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
Well, the barbecues are at the ready, the paddling pools are being filled, and the 99s are flying out the door from the convenience stores and the forecourts. We are not going to be killjoys. We're not going to stop you enjoying yourself, but we have a few cautionary notes to sound as we head into an absolutely scorching weekend. Now, first of all, we're joined by Cathal Nolan, climate scientist and weather analyst. Cathal, good morning.
A very good morning, Pat.
Now, it's mystifying to me. I know we're not necessarily getting a lot of this kind of weather, but other countries that we all go to visit have temperatures well into the 30s, sometimes even into the 40s, and we go there and we enjoy it without batting an eyelid. So, put into context, how rare is this a bird for us?
I suppose in terms of looking at past climatology and I suppose assessing these kind of, I suppose, periods in which we see temperatures out of the ordinary for an Irish context, I suppose each summer we typically get a period in which we would see temperatures in excess of, I suppose, mid to high 20s. What's been unusual, I suppose, in this particular instance this year is that we've had two occasions now in which temperatures are likely to exceed the 30 degree mark. It is pretty rare in an Irish sense, and I suppose looking at the temperatures today and indeed for tomorrow, it's likely that we will breach that 30 degree barrier again. The all-time August record is potentially at risk. It was 31.5 degrees Celsius at Oak Park Carlow in 1995, which was another exceptional summer. And it's likely that we'll push that record pretty close today, and if not today, certainly tomorrow.
Now, it's all very well to enjoy it this year. How likely is it that it'll be repeated? Because you refer to 1995. Now, I recall 1994. And the reason I recall it is we had the World Cup on in the United States. It was USA. All the matches were on earlier in the day over there, but in the late evening for us. And I do recall my daughter, who's actually getting married in a couple of weeks' time, running around the back garden in a nappy at 9 o'clock at night. So, you know, we've had this experience before. We had 94 and 95, two pretty good summers in a row.
It certainly was the case. It was two very good summers in a row at that particular point in time. And I suppose if we go a little bit closer again, I think it was 2005, 2006, would have been two pretty good summers as well, almost back to back. And then, of course, we had the heat wave conditions and the exceptional drought conditions we experienced in 2018. I suppose what we're looking at in terms of a climatological point of view, it's looking at these kind of individual cases where we have temperature extremes. And I suppose looking at the latest guidance and looking at the latest research, it does seem to be that we're experiencing more of these types of conditions, types of situations, whereby we get temperatures breaching all-time records. As we said, we've experienced 33.1 degrees Celsius already this year at the Phoenix Park, which was the highest temperature in over 100 years recorded in Ireland. It's likely over the next couple of years, with favourable conditions, that we will see the all-time temperature record been broken. Yeah. That does seem to be in the cards.
Now, what's the flip side of this? Because, you know, you'll have hosepipe warnings and all the rest, and conserving water because we have a dry summer. Are we going to get wetter winters? Because then we just have to work on building better reservoirs, finding ways to store the water that we need in summer when we get lots of it in the winter.
That would seem to be the case. I suppose looking at the latest literature, looking at the guidance that we expect to see for Ireland with regards to climate change, it does appear to be that we are likely to see drier summer these particular spells where we see less rainfall than we would typically ordinarily have seen, higher temperatures as well. But of course, as you said, the flip side then is we are expected to see an increase in terms of winter precipitation. If you look at, I suppose, the amount of rainfall that we typically see in Ireland, even during a particularly dry summer, we shouldn't be experiencing the shortages of rain, I suppose, available water that we have seen on occasions, particularly casting our minds back to 2018 and the various bans that would have come in effect right across the country, but especially so across the more dense populated east and southeast of the country. It's more of a long-term planning issue, I think, that needs to be addressed. Obviously, we look at the water infrastructure, we see the amount of leakages that we still have within the water system. So certainly it's a case of minimizing those particular leaks and certainly at the same time developing more of a reservoir system whereby we have the available water to get us through such dry spells.
Now, I'm looking across the water, and if you track their news bulletins, you see that in our country, for instance, in our news bulletins, bumper crops for the cereal growers. In Britain, though, they're talking about crops failing because of a lack of moisture. What's so different about them?
I suppose the difference really between the two locations, between ourselves and Britain at the moment, is that for the early part of the summer here, certainly for the months of June and for the first half of July, we would have seen average or above average rainfall. And it's really that above average rainfall that's essentially buffered us with regards to the crops. It's given us that, ability to be able to see such bumper crops. Whereas in the UK, really, it's been dry essentially across certain parts of the south, southeast, since around about the end of April into May. They've experienced drought conditions far worse than we've experienced this year. And with that drought conditions, obviously, we see a limited amount of growth then returning to the particular crop. So I think that's the main difference between the two locations at present.
Are we looking at, in maybe in a decade's time, you know, Chateau Ballydehob will be growing grapes and other such wonders and peaches and stuff like that?
It is a flip side with regards to climate change, I suppose, as well. When we see temperatures increasing, when we see the long-term averages increasing or reduction, let's say, for example, in a frost season, we do start to see, I suppose, alternate crops becoming available and being able to be produced, certainly maybe the south, southeast of the country, in time over the course of coming decades. You may have favorable conditions where we might be able to have, some types of a vineyard with favorable conditions, obviously south-facing and slopes and whatnot, but it is certainly a flip side to climate change.
So, Cathal, in the immediate term then, how long more are we going to be enjoying this this weather? And, you know, we'll help people to enjoy it by adding the few cautionary notes in a moment or two. But how many more days of this?
I suppose the temperatures are likely to peak over the course of the next 48 hours. So today, tomorrow, typically going to be the two hottest days. As we go into Sunday, we'll still retain the hot temperatures, especially so across the east and southeast of the country. However, on Sunday, there is a little bit more instability in the atmosphere. There is a risk of one or two maybe thundery downpours breaking out through the afternoon and evening. As we go into Monday and the early days of next week, we see more substantial change. We lose this particularly hot air mass that's in place at the moment. It's in turn replaced by maybe the northwesterly breeze for a little while, but even with that, temperatures are still likely to be around about maybe 20, 21 degrees Celsius. So coming in around about average, maybe ever so slightly above average for the time of year, and probably holding relatively dry across many parts of the country up until Thursday of next week. But I suppose casting our mind out that far, there's always subject to change with regards to conditions at that point. But the dry conditions probably continue up until around about Thursday. There's only one or two maybe smaller interludes of spells where we may see a risk of heavier downpours through Sunday afternoon, evening, and maybe again on Monday.
Now, the last question really is about these records that are broken. I've heard others say, well, you know, can you rely on the instrumentation that they had back in the day to determine in 1870 that they had a record temperature or whatever it might be? But others say, hang on a second, the mercury is utterly reliable.
With regards to the instrumentations, it is certainly reliable. Regards to the temperatures that we would have experienced, let's say at past times, of course, if we're looking back to the highest temperature Ireland ever experienced, I think it's believed it's back in 1887. So it might be right, you would imagine, in terms of the progression, let's say, of technology. But with regards to the mercury, it's exceptionally accurate. With regards to temperature, it wouldn't have changed all too much over the course of that particular period of time. So certainly, I think we can have confidence within regards to the accurate measurements that we are seeing both in 1887 and, of course, in the present day today.
Cathal, thank you very much for joining us. Cathal Nolan is a climate scientist and weather analyst. Well, now we are joined by all things water safety by Kevin Rattle, who's our RNLI safety lead. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, I know you love what you do, but ideally you want to do as little of it as possible.
That's actually, yes, it's one of those funny things, isn't it? Yeah, we would like to see people enjoy the water, get out there and have fun and not get into trouble in the first place. And from that perspective, we've got some advice that we give people.
Yeah. Now, the first thing is, if you can attend a beach that is lifeguarded, but we know we have many, many beautiful beaches, often in outlying places where few enough people may even bathe. So that's not going to be the case for everybody.
I suppose not. I mean, the key thing is, if you can, a lifeguarded beach or a lifeguarded waterway is the best place to go, because obviously there's supervision. The lifeguards are watching things. They'll also put the flags out to make sure people stay away from some of the local dangers. But I suppose you're right. Not everywhere is lifeguarded. There are a number of things that people can do to ensure that they stay safe. One is that I think ideally try and swim within your depth. So if things go wrong, or you get cramped, or you get tired, or you feel you're getting into a rip current, you can actually stand up and walk out. That would be one thing. While we're talking about rips, rips are very, very common. Rip currents very common on beaches. They're not always easy to see. Sometimes if you've got some waves coming into the beach and there's an area with no waves, it actually looks flat, that's probably where the rip is. They tend to form where there's differences in depth coming off the beach, or they form around man-made structures like piers or walls or groins or things like that. But if you do find yourself, if people do find themselves caught in a rip, it's very, very hard to swim against it. It's very, very fast. They say an Olympic swimmer won't swim against a rip. So it's not worth trying. You'll just exhaust yourself. The trick is, because they are focused in a particular area, they're fairly concentrated. The trick is, if you feel you're being dragged out, swim parallel to the shore until you feel you're not being dragged out again, and then you can make your way ashore.
So eventually you kind of swim in parallel, you swim out of the effect of the rip, and then and only then you can swim towards the shore.
Yes, absolutely, yes. Yeah.
Okay, now we'll talk about people out on boats and bits and pieces that they use these days to get on the water. But first, I want to talk to you about cold water shock. I see these hardies every morning. I'm driving into work, but already the 40-foot swimmers are gathering for their coffees in Glasthule at 7 a.m., having, had a bracing swim. They do it all year round, and I'm sure that they are conscious of thermal shock that you can get in the water. What about at this time of year? Could you possibly suffer from thermal shock in high weather, in high temperatures?
Absolutely, you can suffer from cold water shock at any time, and in fact in many places in the world. We're just having a discussion recently with another a colleague in another organisation, and we were commenting on the fact that actually you can have cold water shock in the Mediterranean anywhere. It's about the relative difference between the body's temperature, the air temperature, and the water temperature. But cold water shock can take place water temperatures below 15 degrees. Now, even in the summer, if we get to 15, 16 degrees, that's about the maximum water temperatures around Ireland. So cold water shock is a realistic thing in Ireland. The effects are very, very simple. The effects are that it causes a gasp reflex. So you start gasping for breath. You start your breathing increases. Your heart rate increases. So it puts a lot of strain on the body, and that's what can cause the difficulty. One of the things that you can do to combat the effect of cold water shock, this is particularly a useful tip for anybody who ends up in the water, either feels cold, feels cramped, or somebody who falls in accidentally, is fight your instinct to swim ashore or try and climb out, because the effect of cold water shock plus the physical exertion is going to put some strain on the body. What we would suggest to people is float on your back. So just turn around, float on your back. You can move your arms and legs gently to help you float. Take some deep breaths for about a minute, minute and a half or whatever, until you feel that your body's kind of coming back to normal, your breathing is coming back to normal. And then you can either try and get out if it's easy enough to get out, or call for help.
Now, the science of all of this tells you that if you do lie on your back and spread your arms out, you will float. I mean, that's what the science tells you. Because, and particularly in salt water, which is more buoyancy than fresh water, you will float. Hard not to panic, though.
It's very hard not to panic. Yeah, the natural reaction is to panic and sort of thrash out and try and make to the shore. But I suppose if people just remember that, don't panic, float on your back, start taking some deep breaths. That'll start to relax you as well. So the panic will start to disappear, and know that you're going to be all right. Once you get over that first minute, minute and a half, your body will come back to a more normal state in terms of breathing and heart rate, and then you'll be able to do something.
Now, finally, we should talk about people who go on the water. Some go out in proper boats with, an outboard motor. Of course, it can get fouled, it can fail, but they might have life jackets and so on. They're doing the right thing. They have a mobile phone, which will work quite a way out to sea, generally speaking. The masts are kind of within signal strength for probably a couple of kilometres out to sea. But then there are others who'll go out in basically blow up boats that are maybe fit for a swimming pool and no more than that, or they'll go out paddle boarding and get caught. They'll, you know, be in ad hoc sailing devices.
Yeah, I think certainly we're seeing a huge increase in water activity, water-based activity, and there's a lot of people taking up paddleboarding, kayaking, that type of thing, especially over the last couple of years since COVID. And it's great to see an increase in that activity. It's healthy, it's getting people out and so on. But there are a couple of key things to remember in terms of being out of the water. One is that somebody who's operating any kind of a craft should be wearing a personal flotation device. So a life jacket or a buoyancy aid, whatever is most appropriate to that activity, that's absolutely essential, because that will help you keep afloat. And it's also extremely important to have some reliable means of raising the alarm. So if you do get into trouble, you can actually raise the alarm. Number of different ways of doing that. Very common amongst a lot of small boats would be a handheld marine VHF. But equally, and we, you know, we recognise there's a lot of people who are just pottering off around the harbour or whatever. The VHF might not be something they would think about, or people who are inland on the lakes in the rivers. So having a mobile phone, maybe in a waterproof pouch, would be an ideal way of just being able to raise the alarm. And if you do get into trouble, or if you do see somebody in trouble, very, very simple, dial 999-112 and ask for the Coast Guard.
You've anticipated a question from our listeners. Who do you call when someone is in difficulty? So,
if it's on the coast or Loch Rea, Loch Derg, the big lakes, then it's the Coast Guard. If you're on a river, a small lake inland, it'll be the Gardaí.
All right, look, Kevin Rahal, RNLI safety lead, thank you very much for all of that information. Now, we want to go to our regular contributor, Celine Daly, who's a dermatology nurse specialist at Sligo University Hospital. Celine, good morning.
Morning.
Now, we know, no matter what you say, there will be a lot of sore backs, sore shoulders, sore legs after this weekend.
Yes, unfortunately. We want people to be sun smart between the 1st of March and the end of September every single year, but particularly over the last week and into the weekend, people need to be very cautious. And why do they need to be careful? Well, 70% of people in Ireland have a fair skin type, skin type 1 to 2. They freckle, red hair, blue-green eyes, and they burn easily. And we know that in weather conditions like this, your skin can burn very easily. Now, why are we concerned about sunburning? Yes, okay, we don't want people to be uncomfortable or blistered or for their skin to be sore, but we're more concerned about skin cancer. And we know that 9 out of every 10 skin cancers are caused by being sunburnt or being chronically suntanned or sun damaged. So we can prevent this by being what we call sun smart. So recently, actually yesterday, there was a publication, a piece of research among 1,000 people who found that maybe 1 in every 7 people aren't using sun cream at all. But it's not all about the sunscreen pad, it's about being sun smart. And sunscreen is very important, but only one part of it. So I want people to wear a factor 30 or a 50, reapply every 2 hours or reapply after toweling off or being in the water. Have your broad-brim hat, your sunglasses, and stay in the shade between 11 and 2. Keep those clothes on. Keep those shoulders covered as well if you can. If you take one part of SunSmart message out, you will become sunburnt, especially on days like today and into tomorrow. So plan your weekend. You know, everyone knows what they're going to do now this weekend. So please plan to be indoors between 11 and 3. That's really crucial, because if you have a little bit of sunscreen on, you know, a stringy vest top, and you're sitting out all day long, having a couple of wines or having a beer, you are going to become sunburnt, especially if you're fair skinned. So just to be careful this weekend.
Yeah. I mean, the vest you're talking about, maybe a string vest, remember those? You'd end up with a lattice work of sunburn on your skin if you wore one of those.
Yes. Unfortunately, women now are wearing a lot of spaghetti straps, so those shoulders are covered, the back is exposed. So think about your clothing. Keep the shoulders covered, keep the legs covered if you can. Wear sunscreen on skin that's exposed, but reapply every 2 hours. Mind those aerosol can sunscreen as well. I know they're very popular at the moment because they're easy and they're invisible to use, but the wind will take them, especially if you're down near the shore or a lake. So reapply before you go out, and reapply every 2 hours when you're outside as well.
I know you talked to us before about when you use these aerosol cans, that unless you kind of apply it and then rub it in with your hand, you're not necessarily covering the whole area. If you're trying to use this to avoid getting your hands sticky or whatever, you may miss bits of your skin because there's a lot of, you know, aerosol gas coming out with the liquid.
Which,
and you may just miss spots, and that's the reality of it.
Mm-hmm. And if you're out in conditions at all, the studies show that the wind actually takes about between 50 and 70% of the product away with it. So you're not actually applying anything on your skin at all. So remember, before you go out, just apply sunscreen to everybody in your household 20 minutes before you leave your house to be sure that you're getting it on correctly in the first instance, and then every single 2 hours. But remember, look at our Spanish friends. They don't stay out all day long. Take a break in the middle of the day. Get some shade under trees, under umbrellas. If you have children, it's very important. I've seen this over the week as well. Parents, well-meaning, but they put blankets over buggies, but children can dehydrate very quickly as well. So don't put a blanket over a buggy. You know, have a proper sun umbrella on a buggy or seek some shade or get inside in where it's cooler as well, especially between 11 and 3 when it's most hot.
Celine, thank you very much for joining us. That's Celine Daly, dermatology nurse specialist at Sligo University Hospital. That science that Celine referenced, 1 in 7 people never apply sunscreen in Ireland, and men even less likely to apply it. 1 in 5 men reporting they never use sunscreen here. And the Irish Cancer Society has said that 1/3 of people underestimate the threat posed by Irish sun, and they don't think that sunburn in Ireland is a thing at all. So there you are.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.